You don't need me to tell you that a lot about life has changed in the last couple of months. We could fill a couple of hours just talking about the scenes at grocery stores and what we've observed there. By several reports, it appears more people are growing their own food this year, so there are lots of first-time gardeners out there, which is why we had offered a weekly chance for gardeners to hear from someone who knows what she's doing. Lynn Kunstman is a master gardener and a member of the Jackson County Master Gardener Association and a weekly visitor to the Jefferson Exchange to answer our questions. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
No, just fine. Thank you.
You crossed my mind the other day because I was watching the rain come down and watching the soil not hold it very well. It had actually been raining enough, at least around my house, to kind of soak things in. I wonder what happens with gardens when you're getting more rain than you expect.
Well, if you have hardened soil, that's going to run off into the, you know, into the waterways, down into the creeks and that sort of stuff. If you have healthy soil, unless it's heavy, heavy clay, in which case, you've got a mud issue. If you've got healthy soil with a lot of organic material in it, the soil should really act like a sponge and be able to absorb that. And here in the Rogue Valley, we never get enough rain that it's going to be, you know, an overwhelming flooding kind of issue if you've got a good healthy soil in place. Mm-hmm. If you've got mulch over that and if it's got good tilth and, you know, crumbly texture. So the best thing you can do for your garden is to add organic material to get that sort of spongy effect going in your garden. So things, you want to keep the water on site. That's the best thing you can do.
You don't want it to run off. Yeah, okay.
Do not want it running off. We you know, if we could keep the stuff from our roofs from running off, that would be a great thing to do as well. And there are ways to do that, but you know, that's a whole other program.
Well, probably is,
but let's
talk briefly about soil amendments, though, because that phrase gets bandied about a lot by master gardeners, and I just wonder what kinds of things you add and when. I mean, would this be the time to do it? Is that something that should have happened over the winter?
Sure. You know, it's kind of an all year long thing. So soil amendments are merely organic materials such as leaves, grass clippings, compost that you might have made, that you are adding to the garden, and it can happen any time of year. It's a good thing in the winter to put, you know, some mulch over your beds to allow the worm activity to continue through the winter and that soil layer to build up because the worms will break that down. Or if you're cover cropping, when you cut that cover crop down, that becomes, you know, organic, a soil amendment in itself. So you can have things like green manures, which are cover crops that you then mow and let that decompose on the surface of the soil, or straw, grass clippings, hay, leaves. All of those are soil amendments. And then, of course, there are the amendments that we buy at the nurseries, which are fertilizers that you're adding as extra nutrient that you might not have in the native soil, because when you're growing a summer garden, you kind of need an accelerated boost of nutrients for those annual crops that you're growing.
Because they don't have enough in the soil naturally?
Primarily because the plants themselves require, because they grow so quickly and they have to flower and fruit all in that short summer season, they are going to need extra nutrient that the soil doesn't contain naturally. If you're growing native plants, you don't ever need to fertilize those. They grow in the wild without anybody coming by with a bucket and tossing fish meal on them, you know. it's you know, you just have to kind of think it through. What we're putting in our vegetable gardens are non-native plants that require, and because they're annual and they're growing in an environment that they're not native to, they're requiring different nutrient load than what our soil would normally carry.
Wow.
But compost works fine for providing that for them.
Mm-hmm. But that's a really good explanation, though, that, you know, we're basically working with non-natives and making them do things that they wouldn't naturally do here. Okay, good.
That's
really good to know
that. Exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm looking at your May in the Food Garden checklist from the Master Gardeners Association,
oh, yeah.
And it starts with put a 3/4 inch to three to 4 inch mulch around your berry plants to keep the soil
right.
evenly moist. Okay, right. That makes sense. But avoid placing that mulch too close to the crowns. You don't want them to rot. So is there kind of a fine balance in making sure that you keep the moisture hanging around, but don't make it like, you know, mildewy or something?
There is always. And it's not so much a problem of mildew. It's because we're in such a dry climate here. But it's if you bring that mulch all the way up to the base of the plants. Now, berry canes are a little more forgiving because they're used to growing out in the woods where they have leaf litter all around them, you know. But if you're bringing mulch up to, say, the base of a tree or even some of our cultivar berry canes, you're giving a pathway. First of all, you're giving a pathway for molds or mildews or those kinds of things, but also for rodents to go up and chew the cambium layer of those plants. So we like to tell people to keep the mulch back 2 or 3 inches from the base of the plant, but then out beyond that, you want to have a nice thick layer of mulch, 3 to 4 inches, because what that will do is keep the soil evenly mulched, and berries love moist soil. You know, they really will do well in an evenly moist layer. The mulch prevents the soil water from evaporating, you know, into the sky. So it's a really good thing in terms of lowering your water bill and doing the best thing for the plants.
Now, are there great disparities, since we're talking about non-native plants, in what the water requirements are? I mean, does there have to be some care and planning and garden in the first place to decide how to place things, because you got stuff on this end that takes a lot of water and stuff on this end that doesn't take as much?
Oh, you mean in the vegetable garden?
Yeah.
Yeah, so most of those non-native vegetables are relatively shallow rooted. Tomatoes will send down really deep roots, but other plants like peppers, eggplants, you know, and our root crops and those things are not sending down, you know, 4 foot roots, 8 foot roots, and so you're going to have to keep the soil evenly moist around those plants once again. In a vegetable garden, mulch, once the soil warms and the plants are growing well, mulch is a terrific way to do that. You know, you won't have to water as frequently, and it will keep the soil more evenly moist. The thing you don't want to do is do a drown and dry kind of deal, where you're watering heavily one day and then waiting 2 or 3 days to water again, and the plant's roots are drying out. That really stresses those plants.
Every time I walk past my apple tree, I remember the people who talk about certain types of trees that like to keep their feet dry or keep their feet wet.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So it's certainly true. Yeah.
We are talking once again with Lynn Kunstman, our resident master gardener, member of the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association. Questions, comments about gardening, welcome from you. You may be a first-time gardener. There are many of them this year, we understand. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Send your email questions to jx@jeffnet.org. So continuing on with May in the Food Garden, the checklist here, the hilling of leeks, for example. What does that even mean, Lynn?
Oh, right. So hilling is a way to actually, with leeks in particular, those are a type of onion. And if you go and buy them in the store, you'll notice there's a long white, you know, from the root about halfway up the leek, it's all white. Well, that only happens if you pull the soil up around the base of the plant. It's exactly the opposite of what I was telling you to do with the mulch. In this case, you do want to bring the mulch all the way up and over the top, you know, 6 to 8 inches of the leek if you want that white coloration. Now, you can just leave the leek in the ground the way it is, and it will just be green all the way up that that stem. But it's a way of blanching the leeks. It's called, so we hill.
Mm-hmm.
We do it also with potatoes, and the reason we do that, and once again, we pull compost or soil up around the growing stems of potatoes, because the potatoes will grow potatoes along every place there's soil around that stem. So you increase your potato yield if you hill your potatoes.
In the case of the leeks, are you doing this because, I mean, do you want the white part because it's tastier or something?
I have no idea. I can't answer that question. It's just tradition that they've been grown that way, and it may be that they stay a little more tender.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that's the reason, but it won't affect the taste. They're going to taste like onions either way, but I'm thinking it might be for tenderness.
All right, and I'm looking at the list of things that you have to transplant the starts of in a food garden, and then things that you can do direct seed into garden soil. And let's right. go with the transplants first, because this is you talked on the first meeting here about how the nurseries seem to be cleaned out of veggie starts, and I heard the same thing from Steve Fry at Fry Family Farm yesterday. It sounds like a lot of people are trying to get their own vegetables grown this year.
Yeah, tons of folks are apparently. Making their own bread and growing their own food, and good for them, you know. So this is the time, and these are actually perfect weather conditions right now today. This overcast where these plants aren't going to be stressed when you pop them out of a pot and put them into the garden soil, because the hot baking sun isn't going to be hitting them. They've got a nice overcast, kind of sprinkly, rainy day. All things like Brussels sprouts, cabbage, you can put in cantaloupe that have been started, or cucumbers, all your eggplants and oriental greens, peppers, squash, sweet potatoes, so many things. The tomatoes can go in now, watermelon can go in now, just lots and lots of all those summer crops.
Mm-hmm. Tomatoes in particular, because it seems like always a popular one for people to grow. If they don't have starts handy, is it just too late to try to go back and get started?
Not
from
necessarily.
Scratch?
If they can get a hold of seed, they could start from seed in some pots, because you can plant tomatoes all this month and into mid-June,
mm-hmm.
And you'll be fine. So if they started now, they could get some starts up and going.
Okay.
It's totally possible.
Good to know. All right. So let's see. You mentioned squash, sweet potatoes, tomatoes, watermelon. Also, you can transplant starts of right now. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do? I mean, for people who are like, well, how deep do I put it? I mean, how big the hole do I make? That kind of stuff. When you're
right.
putting a start in the ground.
Yeah. So there's kind of a rule. If you're planting things like large starts of squash or eggplants, those kinds of things, Brussels sprouts and cabbage, those starts can just go into the ground at the level of the soil in the pot, and they'll be fine. If you bury the stem once they're a little large, sometimes with those vegetables, you can cause some rotting problems with the stem. But tomatoes are the big exception to this rule. They have a very adventitious stem, which has meristematic tissue on it, which will root. So when you get a tomato, no matter what its size, plant it up to the bottom leaves. So you actually are putting a bunch of the stem down, right down into the soil. And we have a special way of planting tomatoes for Master Gardeners, but it's very hard to describe online like this.
On the radio.
We lay the tomatoes actually in a trench on their side and leave them there for a day so that the top of the plant turns up heading for the sun. And then we come back and we fill in the trench so that the stem is lying kind of sideways in the trench in the top 6 inches of soil, which is much warmer soil. So you get faster root growth, you get faster top growth. But it people have trouble imagining that. So I just tell folks, put it in up to the bottom leaves,
uh-huh.
and you'll be fine. And it will root all along that stem.
That was a good description, though. It sounds like you're trying to trick the tomato plant a little bit.
You are, yeah. And you don't want to try and bend that leader, that top part of the plant, up to face the sun, because you'll snap it. You know, so you just lay it in the trench and leave it in. Of course, it will turn. All plants move in the direction of the sun, and so the top will actually turn and head up, and then you come back and fill in that trench, and you know, take the pot away, fill in the trench with soil and compost, and then you've got your roots in a really nice warm great place for that tomato plant to be.
So again, for the first timers, for the folks who are thinking, okay, I don't mind spending a little time out there every day on the food garden. I mean, how labor intensive is it going to be through the summer months? I mean, aside from watering it and making sure things aren't rotting or getting munched up by bugs, what are some of the regular activities?
Well, weeding is a constant, you know, because if you're watering, the weeds are going to come up. So that's kind of an ongoing thing. As you're going through the yard, take your scuffle hoe with you and weed out. If you have an ability, you don't have a drip system down that you're going to displace things, or hand pull weeds. I like to, once the plants are up and big and growing, I go in with the leaves that I've saved from fall and I mulch everything, and that keeps the weeds down. You know, I just bring the mulch in and put it down a couple inches thick, and then if the weeds pop up through it, they're really easy to pull. And so that's how I deal with growing vegetables at my house.
Mm-hmm. So rip them out by the roots. I mean, you want to get all the weed there.
You want to, if you're weeding, you want to take them out by the roots. I mean, you can cut them, if you have a little scuffle hoe, you can cut them off. You know, if you're not going to be cutting through your vegetables, that's the problem. You don't want to disrupt your veggies. It's a great thing at other times when you're doing weeding to leave those roots in the ground, because they will actually rot right there in place and open up air spaces. But you know, it just depends on what the weed is, and if you leave the roots of a morning glory, a bindweed, it's going to just make a bigger bindweed. So you want to get those out by the roots, and make sure you get all the root.
All right, let me give you the 45-second warning, because we're going to hear the music soon. But what's the typical rookie mistake? What's the first thing somebody's going to do wrong in their first garden?
Oh, that's a question I've never thought of. Yeah, I not understanding the nutritional needs of the plants and the water needs of the plants, so that the plant, is not thriving. Mm-hmm. Or the sunlight, knowing where to position the plants and how much space to give them in the garden.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was a good lesson from one of the earlier discussions, too, about making sure that you don't have the tall plants casting too much shade on the shorter ones. So arrange them the right way for that. Okay. See, you have taught us a few things already.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it.
Lynn Kunstman is our guest every week to talk about gardening in a season when a lot more people are doing it. She is a member of the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association. And Lynn, thanks so much once again.
Thank you so much.
All right, talk to you soon. That will do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk about dogs in medicine, Dr. Dogs, coming up in hour 2.